to the Living Farms podcast, the place where we discuss biodynamic practices worldwide for you, your farm, and the planet. So, welcome everybody to the Living Farms podcast of the section for agriculture at the Goetheanum. And I'm very happy today that we have a special guest with us here. It's Peter Kunz, who's the founder of the GZPK, the Getreidezüchtung Peter Kunz, in Switzerland. And he is in the biodynamic agriculture for quite some time now. So around 40 years ago, he concentrated on breeding biodynamic and organic seeds. And he's also founder for the Crop Plant Development Fund, where they really try to promote biodynamic and organic plant breeding with a wide range of measures. And he's also a teacher in different courses and an advisor, for example, in the Heliopolis University in Egypt, and the co-initiator of the Sowing the Futures, the future movement. So welcome, Peter. I'm very happy that you're here with us. And we just may start directly with the question, how did you come across biodynamic agriculture and what motivated you to stay in that area for such a long time now?
Oh, it's quite a long time ago. But for me, not biodynamics was one of the first point. The first point was plant breeding, because at that time, school was boring for me, and I learned hybrid breeding from my father's book. And later, when I worked as a herbologist in research, I had contact with wheat and corn breeders. And there was one main question was the interaction between weeds and the crops. And this is very interesting also for breeding. But by this way, I become aware that several hypotheses and concepts behind conventional breeding, they were wrong, and they still are today again. And that was the point when I realized that organic farming needs really another kind of plant breeding.
And does this mean that your father was also already a farmer, or how did you came across the books from him?
My father was a conventional farmer, not so really conventional, because he has a lot of new ideas. And you realized new ideas, and new ideas was at that time to grow maize in regions where it was not normal at that time. And he worked together with corn breeders, which furnished them new varieties. So when I was 12 years old, I follow up this trials in his fields with new varieties. And I realized what hybrid breeding in maize can bring for the farmers.
Yeah. So you could directly see how the agriculture systems are on a local place. Yeah. And so what was your way then to decide for organic and biodynamics then? So if your father was a conventional farmer, so how was that shift happening for you?
For me, I had many questions about organic farming. I had friends who worked at FIBL at that time, and I have many discussions, but I have questions which they cannot give me some answers. And finally, I met Jochen Bockemühl and Georg Meyer at Goetheanum, Natural Science section. And from them, I got the fundamental introduction in epistemology. That was very important for me, and in Goetheanistic methodology and in biodynamic basics. And that was one point. And the other point was that And in 1980, there was no understatement in organic farming for organic breeding. It was really not present, even among pioneers of organic farming, and even at the Fiebel Institute. I remember when I come to the Fiebel Institute with the idea to do organic breeding, nobody was interested on that. And then I saw that there was some interest and some insight for this problem among biodynamic farmers. And this is because Rudolf Steiner, 100 years ago, he strongly recommends to rebreed all crops to prevent loss of quality and degeneration of the plants. And this was an issue, and I learned with Jochen Bockemühl and Georg Meyer how to do it. And then I began it in the 1980s in Dornach. Yeah.
That's great. Maybe for those ones that are not based in Switzerland, so the Fiebel is a research institute of organic agriculture and was founded in Switzerland. It's one of the first pioneer research institutes, I would say, for organic agriculture. And yeah, it's interesting how sometimes just one or two persons influence the way so much how to come to biodynamics. And I have not met personally Jochen Bockemühl, but I think he was is a specific fellow for many of the biodynamic pioneers. And could you maybe elaborate a little bit more why this epistemology and Goetheanistic science was important for you, or which aspects you relate to biodynamic breeding?
For the breeder, it's important to become aware which are the best or the new plants, because the first step in breeding is visual selection. So you have to recognize the good plants in the field, and for that it's important to be clear what is your concept behind, what is perception, and you have to work on this problem. You have to, and epistemology is a constant task for the breeder. What can I see? What can I taste? What can I see? What is the shape of the plant? You have to sharpen your view to find out one plant in 10,000 others for a new variety. This is every time, this is the first step. And all the other methods, they are behind them. Because it's every time, all our crops, they were here because there was a breeder who saw that is a special plant, and he selects them and multiply the seeds, and that's why we have them.
And how did you train this? We just had recently a workshop on how to perceive the farm organism in biodynamic agriculture, and we collected like very different methods how to be able to train yourself to perceive a plant or an animal. And what was your personal path?
I visited many, many farms. And also in when I was young, I worked as a helper in many farms. So I know many farms, how they work, how they how is the relation between crops, field crops, and green land, animals, and so. Yes, you have to walk around in this organism and to see what happens. And that's also what I try to learn the students in Egypt. you have to walk around and to see what is this tree, what is the effect of shrubs and trees to this whole ecology, to this farm. They contribute. What is the contribution of a field crop? What is the contribution of wind shelter, trees, and so on?
And what would you say is the difference between like conventional organic and biodynamic crops or grains, maybe in particular? Like how do they differ from your perspective?
I don't really know if I understand what your question, but I think finally also organic farmers and several conventional farmers, they work with a farm organism. They have a farm organism. I know also conventional farmers here nearby. There's a conventional farmer. It's clear he applies pesticides and he applies fertilizers, but his farm is an organism. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Because he understands what is need, and he is very carefully to treat the soil, to deal with all these elements. For me, he has partial biodynamic approach. Yeah?
And if you look at the cultures, the grain cultures, the traditional or conventional cultures are different from those ones that you breed, for example, in biodynamics. Like, what is the difference of the plants?
There's a big difference between our varieties and conventional varieties. Because I remarked, yes, also 40 years ago, that there are several breeding goals which were counterproductive for a good health of the plant and a good production. So if you, for example, if you reduced height of the cereals from 120, 140 centimeters to 70 centimeters, then you change completely the whole metabolism and the whole physiology of the plant. And it's clear you can enhance the yield, but you reduce quality, you reduce the potential for ripening, and then there is a new composition of the grain. And in the last years we saw that these conventional varieties, they were not so resilient because they are too short, they have a different rooting system, they have a different root microbiome when they are short. And also in the last year, I found some studies who show that it's really a difference between a long plant and a short plant.
And I think that's interesting, because in the conventional breeding, you breed the plant to be very short, so that, as you said, the grains are bigger and that you have a bigger output and production. But as you said, like with the climate change, for example, you will see that these plants are not that resilient, like when you leave them in their natural shape, or how could you explain that? Like, why is that the case?
At this time, 40 years ago, the breeders talk about that you have to reduce leaf area in every plant. And they reduce leaf area in potatoes, in sugar beets, and in cereals. But leaf area and biomass and length of the plant, this is their life potential. So you reduce the vitality of the plants when you shorten them too much. And it's clear you can enhance the vitality by adding nitrogen from outside, but it's not the same. Because when you add a lot, huge quantities of nitrogen, you can enhance the primary metabolism of the plant, but you cannot enhance the ripening, the translocation and transformation to the fruit and the ripening process. And the ripening process is the other part, and plants must be in equilibrium between primary metabolism and secondary metabolism. And many of the conventional bred plants, they are on the side of the primary metabolism. They produce huge amounts of biomass, but this biomass cannot be transformed into good fruit. And the secondary metabolism is also the source of taste and flour and mineral content and many other substances which we need for a good nutrition.
So did I get you right that in biodynamics breeds the plant is growing at a slower pace, so it's growing slower, but by this the quality of the grains is also increased and has a better nutrient content for the consumer than at the end.
Yeah, in cereals and for our wheat varieties, it's clear that our varieties, they take more time to grow. And I think that in this way, they have more time to install themselves, to root better. And they are they have more biomass, they have more straw, and this is a buffer against difficult conditions when it's drought, high, it's hot, and when there is a scare of water, then these varieties, they perform better.
And I mean, these weather extremes will happen more often in the future. I mean, with climate change, there's a likelihood that you will have more extreme weathers in near time. And so could you say that biodynamic farming helps to increase the resilience of a farm?
I think it helps because you... take more into account that you need a good soil structure, you need a certain humus content, and by this humus content the soil becomes more resilient.
So when you look at the biomass that is produced from the grains, then this can be used also in other areas, so it's not a loss of the biomass.
Yeah. Yes, I worked with the concept of three different yields for a plant, because when you follow the development of a plant, the first yield is rooting and root excretions, and it's a huge amount of the yield is invested into the soil. This is nutrition for the soil. This is the first yield. Then the second yield is... in cereals, it is straw. This is food for the animals, and in the farm circle, it gives good compost, and this is fertilizing the farm organism. And only a third yield is for human consumption. And this concept, these three yields must be also in a certain equilibrium. Otherwise, you have to feed the whole organism. You have to feed the soil. You have to feed the animals. to produce good compost, and you have to reach a good yield also for humans. And I think this is a part of this this holistic concept of the farm organism. And I think also that the farm organism is an evolutionary habitat. In this farm organism, plant can develop better. And we have to create such habitats where plants can develop. And it's important that we have our nurseries in biodynamic farms in different locations, in different biodynamic farms, because we have to care a large diversity of plants, and this potential we have to take care of them.
And I think it's great that you talk about these three different levels of yields, because it gives a different perspective. And one of the main arguments against biodynamic or organic agriculture and grains in particular is that the yield is lower than the grain yield is lower than the conventional breeds. But for me personally, I think we have enough food in the world at the moment, and we had this also in our pre-discussion that you said that that we have food, but the distribution at the moment is uneven and we waste so much of the food. So actually we could produce enough organic and biodynamic food all over the world if we just reduce the food waste. And there's one interesting study from Adrian Müller, which I will link in the show notes for the listeners, which really shows this, that it's not a question of improving and increasing the productivity the whole time, but to take a different perspective and look at the yield issue in a new way, I think.
Yes, I think that to focus to the yield is very, very narrow. It's a very closed focus. For me, we have to talk about yield, yes, but we have to talk about the role in the whole food network. We have partners, we have, and this is important because in the last 100 years, agriculture becomes a business, and I think we have to reintroduce agriculture into the whole society. And agriculture is in between nature and the rest of the society. It's a link between them. And I think this is a common task. It's not only a task for agriculture, and this is also it's a partnership with the society, and it includes also economics, because we need true costs and a fair pricing.
Mm-hmm. That would be like the true cost accounting, that you integrate the cost of also the environment and social costs into the agriculture perspective. It's interesting because I have the feeling that it's changing. So the people realize more and more that agriculture production is an important part of our lives, and that it's like something which really needs holistic and sustainable solutions. Mm-hmm. And now also the World Health Organization, the WHO, released a manifesto where they are clearly stating that we need a sustainable and food production system to have a planetary health. So I think it's coming step by step, but you were one of the first pioneers to really go for this concept, to say, okay, we need a different approach in tackling our problems that we face. And it's for me, it's very great to see. I mean, the breeding of a biodynamic variety takes quite some time. So maybe you can tell us what the different processes are to produce such a variety, and and if this is a good way to deal with our issues that are sometimes quite fast advancing.
Yes, the whole breeding process for a new variety takes 12 to 15 years normally. And when I begin, my first variety takes nearly 20 years. Because you have to begin with crosses, and you have to follow the populations. When we do not some shortening in laboratories and in glass houses, because we want to that the plants were outside, cereals, especially cereals, must be outside all the time. They live with nature, they live with the cosmos. And it's important that all these generations were in the field. Mm-hmm. Normally it's really a long time, but when one time this breeding program is established, you have 10 generations. And you have every year you have new candidate varieties, and it's important that you maintain a wide diversity of in your nursery, and you keep your profile updated. Then you collect resources all over the world. You have to introduce them by crossing. In your own material, and so you can react also relatively fast to changing conditions. I think when I see now these varieties, they perform very well under unfavorable conditions. So I think this concept is not so slow as when you think in the first moment when you see 15 years. It's a long time, but it's like a school. You have the kindergarten and the first class, and you have the 12th class, and it's a whole process. It's a whole enterprise to produce good varieties. And you cannot do that only one time, because the conditions are changing, and breeding has to go forward with our crop plants and they need the care of the breeders every time. It's not a one-time job, but you have to go on forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's also one special aspect about farming in general, or that it's never a fixed state, but that you need like constantly to motivate yourself further and further to adapt your farm and to improve it in a way, and to react also to proactively to the changing processes in the world.
Yeah, there is another aspect also. I think it's very important that breeding is a continuous learning process. Mm-hmm. And when you follow these generations, you can deepen your experience, and it takes time to deepen this experience. And with this experience, the breeder's eye helps to detect the good plants for the future. Mm-hmm. So the breeder is a learner, and it's not the fastest track who goes to the new variety. Perhaps sometimes it takes a long time, but the longer way is the better way.
And that's also something, I mean, I'm not a breeder, as you can, as you probably know. So I'm more on this observing and scientific research perspective. But I could just imagine, like, when you have the different years, and I mean, I just witnessed now for the last years also in Switzerland, they were so different. Like, one year it was super dry, the other year it was very wet. Then you have snow already in November, and the next year you have it in January. And like the conditions are changing, and this is something which goes through the world. Or, I mean, I've also talked to farmers in Great Britain or Australia or the US, and all of them, the situations are changing. And I could just imagine when you have a constant process where you breed a variety over a longer time, then you can also include the different changing patterns of the weather, or that you can see, okay, this variety reacts in a good way to drought, and this year it reacts well to wet conditions. Or how is that working?
We have introduced this question into the breeding program. We have two locations. One location is in Feldbach, near the Lake of Zurich. There is never a drought, never, really never. And the other location is in Rheinau. And in Rheinau, drought is absolutely normal. If there's no rain in the month of June, after 10 days, there is no more water in the soil, and the crops break down if there is no irrigation. But under these conditions, we can test in the same year wet conditions and drought conditions, and we can introduce them into the evaluation of a new variety. And this is very important. And then we have other places in Italy and in Germany in the north, so we can expand this bandwidth of the varieties. And I think this is one of the crucial points also for future breedings, that we have to learn how plants have to grow to become resilient against the one and the other difficult conditions.
And what do you think is the main factor for the plant to be like resilient in the future?
I think one very important thing is rooting, the mm-hmm. connection to the soil and to the soil microbiome. This is very important. If the plant has a good start, if it's good established, then they become resilient. It's the relation between the green part and the root. This is important.
And may I ask something? I don't know if this is too broad thinking, but is it possible, for example, if you have a variety that is tested in Brandenburg, where it's like very dry, sandy soils, and you know it's a hot weather condition. So in Brandenburg, it's a part of Germany where you have like very low precipitation. Is it possible to take a biodynamic cereal breed from this region and cultivate it, for example, in Namibia, where you have similar soils and maybe also precipitation rates? Or would you say that it's important to adapt the varieties really to the local conditions?
I think if the growth cycle of the plant is adapted to the local conditions, then we can use a variety which was bred in Switzerland, also in Italy, in south of Italy. And we have done that, and we have good results also in southern Italy. several varieties perform very well under this very drought conditions and drought and hot conditions, because the development was slow and they develop very well in winter time when there is enough water, and afterwards in springtime and in summertime they were good at established, they have had good roots, they have a good shape, and so they can perform. But we have to test them. There is very few research on this point, because it's not reconnected as important. Because you have if you have longer plants, for example, you have a different microclimate than in a short plant. If you have a short plant, the sun is burning on the soil, and soil is warmer. So I can see them also when I select new traits in breeding lines. Then you can go into the plots without shoes, and then you feel how warm is the soil in one variety and in the next variety. So you have very simple tools to test them if you understand what's important. But there is not so many research about this up to now.
But that would mean that like partnerships are becoming more and more important in breeding organic and biodynamic seeds, or like when you could use them in different regions but also need to test them, then this would mean that like the partnerships become more important.
Yeah, it's important for breeders to have partners a little bit all over the world.
And why do you think this like breeding is not that important yet? Like what are the reasons for the lower awareness, I would say, about organic and biodynamic breeding?
I see that farmers have many things to do. And they were enclosed in a production chain. And many people are not aware what happens behind. What seeds you can buy seeds, and you have good production also in vegetables, but you have not to ask who is the breeder behind them, because in many cases the label says Demeter, but the seeds behind are Monsanto or Syngenta.
So how could, for example, consumers become aware of where the seeds are coming from?
They have to ask. They have to ask the vegetable seller or the baker from where comes the seeds of this product. Mm-hmm. That's the only way he can become aware, and he can ask. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but I still hope we will keep you in the in the biodynamic area. And I would like to close now with a question that I will ask most of my podcast guests. So what are your three main reasons why you work now for more than 40 years in the biodynamics, and why you continue to work here, and what is motivating you to deal with the biodynamic future?
Yes. First, I remark that biodynamic agriculture is more than only food production. Not only production, but it's a whole concept behind. And biodynamic agriculture is also more than agriculture. It's finally one health. It's a development concept for humans together with the earth. And the third, it was very important. Biodynamic agriculture is an individual learning process, and this process can unfold new skills. And we need new skills for our future, but also for the coming generations. And this is, for me, is the most important. We need to unfold new skills for the next generations.
That's great. So that's what we are trying to do with this little podcast here, that we try to support people all over the world to get to learn more about biodynamics and how to apply this to their local regions and how this could help to solve our global problems. So thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you for your questions.
Very good having you here. And I'm looking forward to any future discussions with you. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.